following is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network, available on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboo, and at swn.shiningwizards.com.
Hey everybody, you're listening to TJ Perkins. This is the Shining Wizards podcast, and for the next hour, I'm actually renaming it Manic at the Disco, so have fun.
Gentlemen, welcome to the Shining Wizards Loud Podcast, where it's wrestling talk
and talk about wrestling.
Now, I don't know why that fucking music is so loud. I'm going to have to take that down a little bit. I'm Randy Orton.
I got nothing.
Yeah, I didn't have anything either. That's why I said I'm Randy Orton.
Because he just popped up on the screen.
Exactly.
I could have said, I'm the European Championship.
That's right. I'm the yes, remember the European title as if it was something, you know, something to remember.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all the greats like D'Lo Brown and Shane McMahon and Val Venus, you know, all the legends held it.
Mark Henry.
Mark Henry.
Jeff Jarrett.
China. Didn't China have it?
Didn't Chris Jericho have it?
Yeah, I'm sure they all did. They did that whole thing with Kurt Angle, Jericho.
Midian.
Midian did have it.
Shane Douglas. Shane McMahon. Shane McMahon. Jesus. Why did I say Shane Douglas?
Here you go. Right here.
So how you been?
I'm good.
It's been a while, bro.
It's been a couple weeks. I miss it.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have you back. It's a shame that nobody else is here.
Hey, it's all good.
Kevin and I speak to TJ Perkins in just a little bit. But first, what do we have to talk about? Total Divas was total shit. Let me just start there. Did you watch any of it?
Without sound. It was just on after Raw.
5 minutes. And I couldn't take it anymore. The Bellas, who actually quit the WWE and then came back, actually were threatened.
I feel like they came back just for this.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. They felt threatened that somebody was taking their spot. So they I don't know, they were bitching out the new girls or some shit. But it made no sense. It was stupid on so many levels.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And how, like, they're not linked at all to, like, you watch, like, Raw, and then immediately after, it's like this other world of wrestling people are on.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. And you know what's awesome? We have cookies tonight. Nobody else is here to share them with us.
Those cookies are good, man.
They're fucking deadly is what they
are. I had one, and now I'm like itching for another one.
Want me to?
Yeah, hand me the cookies.
This is for the guy that fucking hates us while we're eating on the air, so fuck you, dude.
I'll wait then.
No, go ahead, dude. Dig in. I'll talk while you chew. It's all right. Let me see. There was something else that I wanted to talk about. Oh, speaking of the Bellas, did you catch the nip slip on Thursday?
Only
Thursday or Monday? It was Monday.
It was last week. Only Phil Rea's Facebook post thanking God for HD television. And he put the picture. I think it was down like 30 seconds later. But I didn't see it live. But I did see the nip.
I didn't see it live either. But oh, okay. There's a picture of Nikki Bella. Wait, which one's got the... Yeah, Nikki's got the fake tits. Nikki Knockers.
They both do now, don't they?
I don't think so. I think it's just... No, because Brie had the small ones when it fell out. That's why it fell out. They weren't big enough to stay stuck in where they were.
Oh, okay.
So there was a picture. Yeah, like you mentioned. How are Nikki and Brie Bella having like all this like real diva stupid shit going on when they're both dating like these major baby faces?
It's a major disconnect to me that I don't see how... Like, it's one thing to have it on like on the E Network or something like that, but to put it on like the replay immediately after Raw, where you just saw them being bitches and then John Cena being like super nice hero man,
it doesn't make sense.
And then having them dating, it's just, I mean, whatever. They're two different things. It's just bizarre to me. That's all.
It makes no sense. And honestly, like, I don't watch like Honey Boo Boo.
No.
I don't watch the Kardashians. I understand what the appeal is and how, like, it's very lowbrow and how people, like, can get into, like, dumb shit like that. But from what I've seen from the first episode, there's, like, no redeeming value whatsoever.
It did well in the ratings from what I read. But actually, the replay actually did, while Raw was down, the replay of Total Divas was better than the initial airing of Total Divas because it had, the I guess, the Raw lead-in.
Well, yeah, but that's never going to happen again because I think that was like a one-shot deal.
Is it?
What I understand.
It's possible. I have no clue.
If the ratings were that much better, maybe it would behoove them to try to work out a deal. It. Yeah, because, USA wants the ratings, of course. Are they associated with E-Television?
I think they're all under their same NBC Universal umbrella.
Well, then maybe they should fucking get on that and figure that out. You know, because people watching 3 hours of Raw are going to want to stick around every week for that fourth hour.
Yeah, her nipple's not coming out on that show.
No, definitely not. What else was there to talk about this week? Ring of Honor's in the midst of their world title tournament.
Yeah, they had a couple first-round matches,
I mean, you know the names, you know the faces. It's just, I don't know. They're spreading it out over the cities. So if you got Ring of Honor coming to you, you could check out some great wrestling with some big names. And I don't know what else there is to say, really.
Yeah, they're going back to the bank. Brian Kendrick, Paul London. I think Jay Lethal's in it at some point. And I mean, not the guys that, like, Roderick Strong's a name that you know. Michael Elgin is that how you pronounce it? Elgin?
Yes.
I got it right?
Thank you. Yes, you did.
He's like their guy now. Matt Taven, I know that name.
Matt loves Tommaso Ciampa. Adam Cole's in there. Jay Lethal, our friend, is in there. Whatever, that's it.
Yeah.
The Forever Hooligans, Rocky Romero and Alex Kozlov. They won the World Tag Team titles. So not only are they the Ring of Honor Tag Team Champs, but they're also the New Japan. Which group has the IWGP belts?
You're asking the wrong wizard.
I don't know. I used to know a bit about Japan, and that's all kind of gone by the wayside. And I am not. Oh Jesus! It's Matt. We're gonna hang up on him. You know that, right?
I sure do.
Shining Wizards.
What's up, buddy?
Oh, what's going on, dude?
Nothing. You guys still recording?
No, Kevin's got my cock in his mouth, and he's fallatating me.
How's that going?
Oh, it's delicious.
Well, for him, I'm sure it's fantastic.
Matt's driving home. I could see him on the TV. What an asshole.
Why am I an ass? I got the Skype on my fancy iPhone.
Yeah, I know, but you didn't have to put the camera on.
I don't know. I'm driving, so I'm not sure. Camera.
We're not cammed up. So what do you want to add to this debacle? We're just about ready to wrap up.
No camera. There you go. I like them apples.
Great. Now you look like TJ Perkins.
Yeah, he's handsome.
All right, Podcast Cancer, what can we do for you?
I didn't know if you were still doing the show, and then I saw you were online, so I said, I'm going to call in and check on my boys.
I knew I should have disconnected.
Really?
Well, we didn't really touch on anything major yet. Is there anything that you wanted to, that over from the weekend or from Raw, or anything that you wanted to touch on? Because we really didn't touch on anything.
Yeah, we're really not in the mood.
We had a great
interview with Mr. Perkins that we're going to let the people in a few minutes.
Cool. Very exciting.
Yes.
So is that a no?
I got nothing. Everything I thought of interest was in that 10-page email I sent you guys.
Yeah, we got them. We touched on the Ring of Honor stuff very, very briefly.
And that's about it.
That's really about it. And we did touch on Total Divas.
And the nip slip.
Did you touch on that awful picture of Muda with Jeff Jarrett?
We actually did during the interview. Thanks for blowing up our spot.
You asked me, you jerk off.
we touched on it. That's we're excited about that and what potentially that could bring.
All right, great.
Yes.
I look forward to listening to it. Tony, have a safe trip, you fuck. Don't throw your wife and kids in the ocean.
Thanks, Dildo.
Later, man.
Mr. Dildo to you guys.
Okay, Mr. Dildo.
Mr. Dildo.
You guys going to be doing shows over the next 2 weeks?
I'm going to try. I have some things lined up for Monday, possibly, like in the afternoon. Some interviews that I know Eddie probably doesn't want to do. And I don't know if Kevin's working, but it's the only...
Oh, no.
Yeah. I have all the time in the world as of yesterday, my friend. So anytime I'm around 24/7 down, basically.
Sorry, Kev.
No, it's all good, dude. Life goes on.
I'll touch base with you then. I have an interview set up for like 11:30 Monday morning, and I have another one possibly for like 2 in the afternoon.
Well, have fun with that.
For that talent to get back to us.
Nice.
Awesome.
I got you. My fucking phone sucks. Go fuck your mother, faggot.
All right, good. I hung up on him.
That was always fun.
Yes. Nothing like dropping faggots. That's Matt's
MO. That's what he does.
You know, I bet you you think he likes dick?
No.
Come on, dude. For real? Between you and me, come on. Nobody's listening.
Nobody's listening. God.
Shit. You know what? The dummy brought up something that made me think about something. And oh, we announced it on the Facebook, but just to make it official, the Shining Wizards, along with the Turnbuckle Throwbacks, Phil Rea and Dave Megapowers, will be at Legends of the Ring this October, October 5th, in beautiful Monroe, New Jersey.
Yeah.
We got a bunch of tables. We're looking into getting some talent, but we don't know who we're getting yet. So it's going to be the six of us with some microphones and some headphones and a wireless mic to do some interviews. It's going to be good times.
And a whole lot of cursing.
Whole lot of cursing. Fuck yes. Maybe we'll have some new t-shirts to unveil at the...
Really?
I don't know. Maybe.
I like the ones that we got.
Yeah. No, I mean new colors.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right.
We've been toying for a while with doing like the Hulkamania colors, like doing a red on yellow or a yellow on red, something like that.
But that's cool, man.
Who knows? We're talking shop. Nobody fucking cares. Yeah. Whatever. You know what? See if you can punch up 401 Mania or Angry Marks or one of those sites. Let's see if we can get something going. Just before we get into our interview with Mr. TJ Perkins. Yeah, I know everybody's like, what the fuck are they doing? Who cares? I hear dinging. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. This is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network, swn.shiningwizards.com. 7 great shows, 1 great place. Check out our folks down in Philadelphia. Mike Norenganger has a couple of new guests. I can't remember their names, but they've got a brand new episode where they're talking about Saved by the Bell. It's hilarious. I'm about 3/4 of the way through it, and I can't stop fucking laughing and yelling at things at them while they're talking about it. Oh, it's great. Also, coming this week, I am almost positive the Fallen Angels are going to be having their first episode.
Nice.
And now I'm dying of the fucking Lou Gehrig's disease.
Is this the site? Is this the right site?
Yes. 2.5 wrestlers, Pat Buck, Jay Silva, Kevin Matthews, Turnbuckle Throwbacks, Phil Rea, and you're leaning on the fucking push that in. There you go. Kevin's giving the fucking podcast cancer now.
It was bound to happen at some point.
2.5 wrestlers, the Neckbreaker podcast, Brian and John, heavy metal, and whatchamacallit, pro wrestling. Jesus, I'm in a fucking awful spot tonight.
He's surfing on the chair right now to read the...
just incredible. Pro Wrestling 101, he's got a brand new episode where he talks about tag teams.
I watched that one. That was good.
Not the group, the actual tag teams.
Yeah, yeah. That was really good. I actually enjoyed that. I couldn't find it. I wanted to share it, though. I couldn't find it on... I mean, other than me actually watching it.
Well, it's on the Shining Wizards Network if you want to listen to it. And we even got the commercial on there. You can find out how to buy all his new t-shirts, including the Fear the Jockstrap shirt.
Yeah, but he was really insightful on what makes a good tag team, and if you have any interest in getting into the pro wrestling business, don't overlook finding a guy that you get along with and tagging up.
Tag team back again.
Party on, party people. Right? Is that it? Is that how
something like that? Yes. No, so there's really no fucking news. Apparently, a fan attacked Randy Orton outside a house show. I'm sure it was somewhere in... Oh,
I'm sure he deserved it.
Oh, here we go. It's in South Africa. Well, there you go. Maybe it's the Power Udi. Well, he's Nigeria, but who knows, unless he's traveling, whatever. I've got nothing else. Is there anything that you want to talk about? I just want to get this... I want to get people into this interview.
Because it's a good one. Yeah, let's just roll right to the interview.
All right, folks, when we come back... Or you know what? Fuck it, we're not coming back. Here's the interview. Shut up, eat my ass.
Finish this episode of The Shining Wizards, get off that $12 whore you just tore apart, and check out Neckbreaker, the only podcast on professional wrestling and heavy metal music. Wrestling headlines, metal news, and guest interviews while your hosts get completely shit-faced. New episodes premiere every 2 weeks on Neckbreaker.net. Or follow their lousy updates on Twitter and Facebook at NB Podcast. Just like Ziggler at the Garden, this ad is over.
Well, folks, our next guest, I'm sure you've seen him the past couple of weeks on TNA Impact Wrestling. He's got his feet in the fire. He's been involved in some high-profile matches. He's your current and reigning X-Division champion of Total Nonstop Action Impact Wrestling. He's got a big match coming up, champion versus champion against Chris Sabin this week on Impact. And he's got quite the career for a young man. He's been in the business 14 years, starting at the age of 14. Well, let me not kiss any more ass. Let me just introduce you to the guy. It's Manic, TJ Perkins. TJ, how are you tonight?
Very good, very good. Thanks for having me, guys.
No problem, my friend. First, right off the bat, I need to ask you, what do you think of the new X Division actual title belt?
Oh, I really love it. It's the change of colors is a nice fresh change. Plus, that older one they had was real jagged and getting sort of beat up, I guess, you know, mostly from the nature of the people that win that belt are pretty reckless anyway, so
<That's true.
laughs> I think it's nice to have a shiny new one, and I think, you know, despite, I think it's a good mix of like a modern style looking belt, and it has like some shape of some old classic style belt, so I kind of like that.
Yeah, and it is, I'll give them credit for this, it is going with this whole like color scheme that TNA actually has regarding even with like the ropes and the set and even the website, that blue thing. So I'll give them a pass on that, but other than that, oof, I don't know, man.
Oh, come on.
Well, I like the cool electric blue too as well. I like the smaller plates being a little less gaudy to me. It reminds me of like the old NWA title. Like it wasn't
right.
It didn't take over the entire wrestler's body. Like
and does it weigh less? Is that something?
It weighs about the same as any other belt. Although all the other belts I can only hold for a minute because I'd have to do it when nobody's looking. But
so. All right, that's cool. Let's jump right into the X Division. I want to start off with the whole revamping of the X Division and how it actually is being run now with the triple threat format. I mean, you had other runs in TNA where you were in multiple person matches, but the singles matches for the championship were there at the time. Now everything is contested under triple threat. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that the only thing that bothered me sometimes, you know, every single time you have a match like that, one guy's going to be painted as like the dark horse, so to speak, when in actuality they're as much a number one contender as any other person in the match. So I feel like it's kind of a double-edged sword because guys are fighting for their individuality, which, you know, provides for them to, you know, put out maybe better performances. But I think it, you know, it can complicate it because I think guys feel like they need to compensate more in order to stay relevant. So I guess it's a constructive format just in the sense of creating more competition, like in every sense. I mean, mentally, professionally, everything, it makes you feel a lot more competitive when you know you have to share the spotlight like that. But, I mean, it's in relation to the way that the division has always been, it's not altogether that different from any other time in history. Just now it's formatted, and now that there's an actual rule book that says
it's official.
Yeah. I mean, you'd see that. I mean, we've been seeing it for years. It's just, you know, it was never written on a piece of paper. So,
but now, do you think the complete elimination of singles bouts could maybe like rob the match of like an intensity, like in terms of like actual personal issues building up to a title match? Because, I mean, like, how many times can you have personal issues and a heated rivalry with two other guys at the same time? You know what I mean? Like, maybe what I'm trying to say is that I don't know if there's ever, like, this big match, like, feel like, hey, man, like, I got to beat this guy's ass to get this title.
Well, I do feel that way, but I kind of feel like that's not on the shoulders of the format so much as it is on the shoulders of the individuals competing. I mean, you know, there are personal things that people are drawn into, that they're there. But if you are not staying relevant as an individual, then people are going to refuse to see it. I think recent history is a good example. You know, myself and Kenny King and Chris Sabin were kind of shared a spotlight for, you know, several weeks. And, you know, initially, Sabin was on a tear. So a lot of people are drawn into him. So it was my job to make sure that I'm making a statement, you know, vying for the same exact spot that he is. And it ended up being a pretty equal share as far as, you know, we all have individual stories, but people were drawn into each direction, whether, you know, there's a lot of people that look to Kenny as a guy that they're hoping to hang on to his spot, and they can relate to that. There's a lot of guys that, you know, obviously the entire world, I think, can relate to Chris Sabin and him having such a comeback story. And I think me making a big splash out of nowhere, you know, I had to fight to stay relevant there. I think in other cases, you don't see guys holding on to their – they don't handle themselves well enough to keep that up. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying about the competitive nature of it. Although I do think that, you know, they are probably going to keep an open book as to, you know, how the format will continue. I think that, you know, if we are to see, you know, headline style matches, I mean, like, I'm going to wrestle the world champ in a singles match coming up here soon. So, I mean, if they can see, you know, kind of the draw and interest in special occasions, I think that the format isn't exactly set in stone.
Right. Now let me ask you this. What was that like coming out with Hulk Hogan? That had to have been like probably one of the biggest moments. I know you've done a lot of stuff, so don't let me put words in your mouth. But that whole angle was had to have been pretty special for you, no?
I could have done without having appeared after being beaten with an inch of my life, but right. But outside of limping across the stage, you know, it's a pretty big moment. One of those things that you kind of you have to kind of take a double take to appreciate it, you know, because I mean, this is a guy that, you know, my mom had him sign one of my headshots when I was a little kid, and I've had his autograph on my wall since before I was a wrestler, which is saying something because I've been wrestling for 15 years now. So, like, I mean, this is a guy, you know, I mean, who doesn't know Hulk Hogan? 10 years from now, a new wrestling fan will be created that maybe isn't even born yet, and they will know who Hulk Hogan is. Like, it's insane to think how much impact he's had on the world that's how far he reaches. So, you know, of course, being able to stand shoulder to shoulder with this guy is, you know, a pretty powerful thing.
What's your take on, and I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this, but Impact has lately, you've seen with guys like Austin Aries and now Chris Sabin and now yourself, opening the door for talent that may not have been pictured as super main event top level guys. And Impact now is trusting, I guess, former X Division talents with the ball to be the face of the company. And what's your take on that, and why do you believe that that's the way it's going down?
You know, personally, I kind of feel like it's a case of if you look at another major league company, like we look at like say WWE, and there's guys like CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, and people firmly believe that they're doing such revolutionary things. But I mean, you look back through history, there's been somebody doing that every few years. I mean, we're talking Guerrero and Jericho and Michaels and Hart.
Right.
I mean, we go back as far as the days of San Martino, and some of those heavyweight main eventers are like 5'10", 5'11".
Yeah.
And, you know, they might be heavier guys, but they're really not, you know, they don't fit the mold of what people, like, I think people assume that they have a roster of 70 people that look like Batista. That's never been the case.
Yeah.
But in this case, I really feel like, you know, the people that you mentioned, you know, with myself and Chris Sabin and Austin Aries, I think that it's a situation opposite of that, where the world is kind of seeing us carry the ball better than previous people who are the exact opposite mold of us, you know, within TNA. And I think the fact that we're able to build more momentum and do more with less. I think that's where you see the transition, you know, as opposed to, you know, older stars coming in and being handed the same ball that they had previously, and maybe they can't carry it the same way, you know, but there was always faith in them. I think now we're, you know, showing that, you know, there can be faith given across the board, because there's a lot of people that can do just as well. So
I know this is probably the white elephant in the room, and I know that, you know, you're in the trenches there, and you've actually got yourself a nice prime spot, X Division champion versus champion against Chris Sabin in the very near future. What's the vibe like in TNA these days? I know the past couple of weeks there's been quite a few roster cuts. I know Dixie's been out and about, you know, making statements that TNA is in, they're in a state of change. You know, things are moving. You know, we have to make some cuts back to move forward. You know, what's the vibe like? Like, what are you feeling? What have you noticed? Are things moving in a good direction, in your opinion? Or is it a kind of a wait and see thing with TNA right now?
You know, I think things are great. I think that, people say this about, and it's not even about wrestling, but just about a lot of things when you're on the inside or on the outside looking in, and how different it can be, you know, when you're not, you know, present for everything. And this really, I mean, fits one of those cases. Like, I've, you know, been, as far as I can see, like, everything is as positive as it could be. I mean, nobody feels like as far as I've been back, I mean, when I was like 18 years old, I first, you know, came into TNA, like back in, it was like 2004 or something like that. I was like 19. And from then till now, you know, I've been back intermittently, and I feel like the changes have been progressively good. I've never seen them take a step back. And I think the professional changes that have gone on in formats and, you know, taking the show on the road and the touring schedule and stuff like that, everything has been, you know, a positive transition. And I think they've handled it really well. And as far as, like, you know, cuts and things like that, I think that a lot of people make a big deal out of, you know, kind of making something out of nothing, because, I mean, it sucks when difficult decisions have to be made. But, I mean, this really isn't anything new, and not anything that you don't see anywhere else. I mean, WWE cuts like 50 people like clockwork the same time of the year, every single year.
Yeah, this is true.
It's just part of being, you know, I mean, and it's with anything. If you run a professional sports team, sometimes half the roster's gone at the end of the season. That's just the way it is. You know, you like to see some guys stay. You understand when some guys go, and, you know, it's a tough situation. But I think if you look at it in a different way, I mean, professional wrestling, unlike, you know, I mean, you could be a CEO or something, like, or an executive somewhere. And, you know, if you lose your job there, there's no public announcement to the world. Hey, you know, we wish the best of luck to this guy. He's available now. Like, you know, there's no kind of like validation, sort of, so to speak. Like, you know, if somewhere else, it's even more, if you work some other job, it's like more cutthroat. Like, if you were an executive somewhere, if your contract's up or you get fired, you're done. Like, there's no, you know, they don't put it out in public that you know you've been a great employee, good luck to this guy, or anything like that. You're just out. Like, I don't see why people think it's so harsh in wrestling, when I feel like we do a lot for each other when ties are cut, like, you know, to maintain careers and such. So
I think I think part of the issue is that, number one, you know, you guys are in the public eye. You all have, you know, a following, whether it's, you know, a few people or a lot of people, depending on where you're working and who you're working for. And, you know, nobody wants to see, you know, especially themselves fail. But, you know, if you're a fan of, you know, say X or Y, and, you know, X or Y just got released by WWE or TNA, you know, people's feelings get hurt, because it's like, you know, this guy busts his ass. You know, we invested our time into, like, you know, seeing him and hoping that he progresses and whatnot. And, you know, to have that, you know, the proverbial rug taken out from under you, you know, I think there's a bit more emotion behind someone that we see, you know, weekly on television as opposed to somebody, you know, I guess a faceless suit in some company. I think.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. And that's, I mean, something like that will never change. I mean, as a fan of anything, I mean, you hate to see something that you've become so attached to go.
Like your favorite baseball player gets traded from the team and goes somewhere else.
Exactly.
Something like that.
Like I didn't want to see Meta World Peace get amnesty.
A Laker fan?
I sometimes hate him and I want him to go to the bench. But, you know, like then at the same time, like you hear that he gets cut and it's like, you know, that sucks. But
he's on the Knicks now. Don't worry.
I can watch the Knicks if I need to see him. But I mean, you know, like I was saying before, you know, any organization, you know, especially in entertainment, I mean, they have to make these exact same changes routinely. I think, you know, it's not anything out of the ordinary. I think if anybody sees it that way, then I think that's kind of a case of them trying to see it, you know, in a negative way. You know, and then sometimes there's tough cuts, like, you know, with people where you feel like, you know, they should have been given a bigger chance or something like that, maybe because of, you know, like the course that their career has taken or something like that, or something that's happened to them with, you know, within their personal life or whatever their story is. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, we all sign up for this knowing all the negatives, so I don't see why it should be such a surprise if, you know, the ball doesn't always exactly bounce the way we think. I mean, I've been homeless. I've been bankrupt. I've been cut a million times from a million places, and I've had opportunities taken from me that was completely beyond my control, and never once have I ever said, man, I hate this place, wherever I was, you know, like, I signed up for this. When I was 13 years old, I knew what I was getting into. It's just, we all do. And it's hard for the fans to understand that. But at the same time, you know, I think that if you do see the bigger picture, you would see that it's just a tough part of any job in the world. And as far as morale, I mean, not everybody has the luxury of being able to walk the hallways of the locker rooms. But, you know, I think morale, to me, especially because I know so many people and, you know, that I work with, and it's as high as it's ever been. I mean, I think people, you know, whether it's WWE or here or, you know, a Japanese company or CMLL or something like that, like, you know, sometimes negative people want, they'll only want to see like a certain reality in their head. Like, people are walking around with their heads down or anything like that, and that's never been the case. In fact, I've never ever once seen that be the case from 2004 until now. So,
I think it's nice for the fans to be able to hear a perspective like, you know, someone as yourself, you know, being in the trenches, being around it, instead of just, you know, reading something on a wrestling website and, you know, automatically, like, you know, it's the company's fault and, you know, like, everything is awful. Why do they fire, you know, so-and-so and blah, blah, blah. So it's actually nice to put a perspective in it. Speaking of which, Manic, this is your Iron Man. Does Manic give you any sort of superpowers when you wrestle? I mean, I know Hulk Hogan dragged you out as, you know, this is TJ Perkins. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm working on getting my iTunes pumped into my mask so I can listen to, you know, my playlist when I wrestle. I think
American Eagle sells those.
Yeah, probably.
You might be able to get that there.
X-ray vision or something put into my my eye screens or something, but maybe a coolant system into the suit. I don't know. I feel comfortable in it. Really,
Is it hot or is that like Under Armour? It's like a dead. That's a dead serious question.
That's a funny question because I think Under Armour is hot as hell.
Yeah. So, right. Like, okay. Well,
but I don't like training in Under Armour, but to be honest with you, I think I sweat a lot less in this suit than, you know, any other, you know, more traditional outfit I've ever had in the past. So. it's not just aesthetics or mental confidence. It's definitely some physical support somehow as well. So
that's cool. Tony, did you have something that you were going on with?
Yeah, just all right. So now, you know, you originally started a suicide. You became manic. Is there anything, you know, from your history or anything that I don't want to say bring to the character, or I guess make the character your own? Like, you know, is manic just another persona, or is manic really just TJ Perkins behind a mask? I mean, is there something about manic?
Well, you know, the easiest way to put it is manic is TJ and TJ is manic. You know, we're not two different people, and I've been blessed and cursed with an incredibly long career, and I've had to portray several different identities in the past, and you know, they were never altogether separate from, you know, TJ, the person that I am. But I think manic is has become a symbol for me where I'm kind of just putting it all together. I think now it's one of those things where you know, you have a lot of questions and you're working on your efficiency as a performer and stuff like that. And I think manic is finally a situation for me where, you know, I have all the answers I'm looking for and I'm finally putting it all together the right way.
Are you excited about where this character's going?
Absolutely. I mean, who doesn't want to be a comic book hero? Like, I think that's something that we could all relate to. It's like, man, this would be awesome. This is real life. Like, so to me, it's pretty crazy because it is real life now. So I'm incredibly excited. I'm a fan of, you know, comic books and video games and animes and things like that. So, you know, as much as I am like a dumb jock and I love sports, but you know, I'm very much into the artistic side of what I'm tapping into now. And you know, it's really a great platform and a great symbol for me to engulf myself in. So
you said just a few minutes ago that you're no stranger to putting on masks. I mean, I've a few times in your career, especially even when you started out, I mean, you were 14 years old. First of all, I don't know how you find somebody that's going to train you at 14, let alone let you work. And then
13, actually.
Sorry.
Even earlier.
So what's that like? You walk into a training school and you're just like, hey, train me. I mean, how does that come about for a 13-year-old to follow a dream so young like that?
Well, when I was about 12 or so, I mean, I grew up always thinking I'm going to be a wrestler someday. And not like I'm one of these super overpassionate guys where, like, you know, I look everybody in the eye with like an angry look, like, I'm a wrestler, like, this is my life. Like, I'm passionate about it, but I mean, it was almost like I was more of an idiot when I was a kid. Like, I grew up and wrestling, I mean, I don't remember a single moment, like, when, it's like, oh, I know wrestling. I mean, I remember watching Saturday Night's Main Event when I was, like, 3. And so I just know that it's always been an interest of mine, but I grew up in such an introverted way about it that I kind of assumed everybody just grew up to be wrestlers. Like, that's how big of a world it was to me. Like in my that's head, amazing. I was like, well, this kid's going to grow up and be a wrestler. Someday I'm going to grow up and be a, like, we all become wrestlers, even though I know full well that there are doctors and firemen in the world.
That's hilarious.
And that's funny because you said before, like, you chose, you said that you knew what you were getting into, and that, like, immediately, like, in terms of, like, the rigors and the possible heartbreak and the obstacles and the bumps, and I'm that, like, little light bulb in my head, I'm like, you're 12, you're 13 years old. Do you really know what you're getting into?
I was a mature thinker for, like, a young kid. I think a lot of people wonder, like, if I had, like, really awful parents because I was, like, you know, hitchhiking and, like, to shows and ditching school and stuff when I was, like, 13. But it wasn't anything like that. I just, from an early age, like, I learned how to do laundry when I was 10. I rewired the VCR when I was, like, 5. Like,
I still don't know how to do laundry.
It
see,
shows.
Like, my parents grew up working for the airline, so they, you know, I used to be left alone with, like, my little sister and, like, a babysitter for, like, weeks at a time. I never had to be watched. I just, like, I was always well-mannered. I was smart. Like, I knew sticking fingers in a light socket was stupid. I didn't have to get shocked in order to learn it, you know?
My kid still doesn't know that.
Something about my common sense was always pretty good growing up. So by the time I was 12 and I was going to, you know, start high school soon, and I thought, okay, well, you know, I need a serious career. And, like, so I started thinking about it more seriously. And I figured I would wrestle amateurs in high school and then, you know, try to find the pro wrestling gym after I graduate. But when I showed up to school that first day, they didn't have an amateur program where I went to high school. So I figured, okay, well, that's out. And then, you know, I started looking around and seeing how I can go about someday going to wrestling school. And at the time, it was like Shawn Michaels hadn't opened his school yet, but he was going to. So I sent away for it. And then, like, Dean Malenko had a school in Florida. I sent away for it. And then, you know, all these places are, like, you know, things that are not possible for a 13-year-old kid. And then I started getting a little bit closer. Like, I found All Pro Wrestling in San Francisco, but, the, you know, it's like a 6-hour commute, and I, you know, I can't even drive for another 3 years. So eventually, just being lucky, you know, I live in Los Angeles, so there's a strong, authentic Lucha Libre culture here. I come to find that there's a lot of, you know, non-public, you know, Lucha Libre gyms and people that are willing to train, and the culture, they don't, you know, they're not, you know, they don't need you to be 21 years old or anything like that. So, you know, I was freshman year of high school, I was 13 years old, it was 1998, and I just found a gym that let me start when I was 13 and never looked back since.
So the core of your training is the lucha style?
Yeah, I'd say so. And even, you know, as I've gotten older and branched out and learned so much about, you know, the wrestling world and the history of it and different styles and stuff, I always kind of come back to Lucha Libre because I think the more you learn about wrestling, the more you see that so much of the history of wrestling intersects with Lucha Libre. Like, it encompasses so many different things if you know the actual lineage of it all. So
Pinoy Boy, am I saying that right?
That's right.
That's your first, you wrestled under a mask, of course. I mean, because they said you had quite the baby face even at, I guess, the young age of 13 years old.
Yeah, well, I guess I still do. I mean, the day that I showed up without a mask on Impact, people thought I was like 19 years old. So,
how old are you?
I'm 28 now.
All right. Yeah, so you're a young veteran.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, like, imagine how I must have looked when I was 13. So,
well, from your time in training, you went to Mexico right away after that, or did you go right to Japan?
So when I first started, it was like, you know, I was wrestling locally, but then I would probably, like, from when I was 13 till I was about 16 or 17, I was wrestling locally, and then as far north as, like, San Francisco, and then out to Vegas, Arizona, and then across the border in, like, Tijuana and, like, the border cities. So I was traveling a lot for a guy that, I guess that's a lot for anybody just at the independent level to be able to have a region that's that far reaching, but that was basically my range for those first few years. When I was 17, I started wrestling at a place called Ultimate Pro Wrestling, right. UPW out of LA, which, yeah, at the time was a developmental territory. I think that was right before they established OVW as their primary place, and you know, for those that have, you know, watch wrestling for a little while now, I mean, that's, you know, where John Cena came from. That's where Victoria came from. I believe, like, The Miz spent time there. There's a lot of people that have spent time there, so.
Why'd you chuckle when you said The Miz?
No, I was, just because there's so many people of varying times that I want to say he was there, but I laugh because it's just weird to me. Like, as I'm saying this stuff, like, I remember being in wrestling practice with John Cena, like, doing trading hammerlocks and stuff like that.
That was crazy.
Like, it was like, you know, a few years later, he's the king of the world. So it's like, to me, it's just funny to think about all these people and the success that they've gotten, and like, how valuable and important they are to the world when at one time we were all just sitting around in gym clothes, like
that is,
you know,
pretty...
wondering if we're ever going to get out of the training gym. So
that's got to be amazing to think about. Who you mentioned like the Cenas when you were at UPW. Who are some of the other names that were floating around your area that other listeners that might know of?
Well, let's see. Other guys who were regional guys with me at the time. Everybody knows Bad Influence now, obviously, in TNA. Frankie Kazarian was trying to branch out. Christopher Daniels was already really well-traveled at that time.
Right.
And he was trying to put his stamp at the mainstream level. And so he was another guy that was kind of part of that circle. Samoa Joe as well. I think we started around the same time. Let's see who else. I mean, we're talking a few years later, there'd be Melina would come along and Shelly Martinez.
Shelly.
There's a ton of people. I mean, it's like, if I really sat and thought about it, I'd probably be able to build a pretty big list of people that came out of this area, you know, over the span of, you know, I don't know, 5 years from 98 till like 2002 or three. So.
Right. And, I mean, of course, you know, Japan, Mexico, you've been to. Have you wrestled anywhere else regularly, like other than, I guess, Japan, Mexico, and the United States? Did you spend any time anywhere else?
I mean, I've made some, like, sporadic trips to Europe, you know, like Germany, Spain. I did I taught a week-long clinic in Barcelona a few years ago.
Ooh.
I lived in Canada for a few months in Toronto. But, you know, North America, especially at this time now, it's kind of all-encompassing. It's not like it was, like, in, like, you know, 1978 or anything like that. But
yeah, true.
And then Paris, France. I've wrestled in Paris. That was the biggest crowd I've ever wrestled in front of, which is pretty cool. That was, like, 75,000 people.
Wow.
Which is awesome because, now that I think about it, like, I don't know if I'll ever wrestle in front of a crowd that big again, no matter where I go. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, you know what? We just completely forgot to even mention this before. Pretty big news coming from TNA today. The Great Muta was in town. And apparently, maybe perhaps working on some sort of deal to maybe do a talent swap or something of that nature. Any light that you could possibly shed on that, or any views or opinions on it?
I mean, as far as news goes, I got the news like anybody else did. I think somebody had just told me, not even somebody within TNA, just like a friend of mine said, you know, hey, did you hear about this? And, you know, I had no prior knowledge of that at all. I barely kind of understood that Wrestle One had broken off and was born, you know, just very recently, which obviously it was very recent, but you know, so much of this stuff is all news to me. I think it's really great. I mean, working relationships of this nature have always, I think, been a positive thing. Like, I mean, you look back at like WCW and their relationship with New Japan, and you know, back in the, like, I want to say like late 80s to early 90s when WWF had All Japan and yeah, I think it both sides get a lot out of it, and it offers some variety and things that, you know, it gives you some moments that you'll never ever see again. You know, so I think that it's a really cool thing. Plus, I mean, you know, it's the Great Muta. Like,
yeah,
who's cooler,
of course,
than the Great Muta? I mean,
yeah, it takes me back to years ago when I remember when they used to do the like the One Worlds Collide pay per view at AAA,
yeah.
And they had the Collision,
exactly,
in Korea.
Yeah.
You know, the big show that they did. One thing I wanted to ask you about, I don't want to glance over your time in Japan. They actually gave you the character Puma.
Yeah.
Modeling,
yes,
you
did,
after the great history of Tiger Mask. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, actually, it's funny because that wasn't even the first character they gave me. They had given me the character Cobra 2 very briefly, but...
Wow, Cobra, that's a name that brings me back a little,
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, nothing ever really came about that. I think there was a brief period of time when they wanted to take a very nostalgic vintage route, and they you know, they were trying to restore, you know, a lot of things through Tiger Mask 4. So in doing that, they before they even created the next Black Tiger, which was, you know, eventually Rocky Romero, their first idea was, well, let's reboot Cobra. We'll start with that. So they gave that to me, and then a little bit later, you know, they had Rocky Romero as Black Tiger 4, I think it was, and at the time Brian Danielson was still with us working for the company, and so that he was, you know, and they're not going to rename him, but he was kind of the atypical Dynamite Kid model. So they wanted to have kind of a nostalgic circle for a little bit, but you know, they ended up changing it up with me. Obviously, they kept Black Tiger, and then Brian Danielson ended up leaving, you know, for his own reasons. So
that's pretty crazy, though, that you'd be involved, and you know, I mean, everybody knows Tiger Mask, the original Tiger Mask, you know, coming down through history. That stood out. That's a big deal when a company like that, you know, wants to reboot their history, and they're giving it to, you know, young guys like yourself and Rocky Romero and you know, having Brian Danielson involved. That's a pretty big deal.
I thought it was insane just because, like, yeah, I was so young at the time.
Yeah,
I mean, I was like 19 years old. Actually, no, I was 18 years old when when I had my first match as Cobra 2. I only had a few. And I you know, I guess maybe they wanted me to go in a different direction. That's how Puma came about. So, you know, there was that. But, yeah, I mean, it was as I got older, I realized how big of a deal it kind of was for them to say, this is a huge part of our history. Now we would like you to hold it. Like, you know, at the time I don't think I realized how big of a deal that was.
You spent a bit of time training in New Japan. What was that like?
I guess like anybody else that, you know, spent time there, you know, from, you know, people that we've heard of in the past. I mean, I stayed, in the dorms. My first dorm room there was Chris Benoit's old dorm. Wow. They still have all kinds of old, you know, stuff from the company's history there, old, trophies from old titles. I think one of Mark Rocco's masks was all dusty and tucked in between a bunch of old magazines there. Like, it's a weird experience to stay there and to think of how much history has come through there. And as far as the training, it's, you know, what everybody else or what everybody, thinks it was. I mean, do, you know, several hundred squats and push ups. And there was a rack of kendo sticks on the wall, which, you know, could be used on somebody's head or something if they were not doing things right. I've seen several young boys get the crap kicked out of them for not, you know, I guess being compliant enough, even though to me it looked like they're doing a really good job. So it scared me to death because I was thinking, oh God, what, they're doing a great job.
Being so young and going to Japan, were you up to date? Were you knowledgeable at that point in your career of most of the history of the Japanese wrestling and the characters and the guys that have been there before you? Did you know enough about it going in, or did you learn there?
Oh, no, I knew all about it. New Japan was my ultimate bucket list thing. I guess
my question was more as like a 13, 14, 15 year old. Did you, like, knowing that one day that the road might possibly take you there, like growing up, did you know about it?
Yeah, growing up, I knew about it, but I had no idea that I would ever be there. Like, to me, that was the ultimate bucket list thing. Like, as wrestlers, or rather, like, you know, fans will listen to wrestlers, and some wrestlers will say, well, I don't want to go to, like, Major League this or that. Like, I don't want to be in TNA or WWE. And it's like, no, you're lying. Everybody yeah. wants to be in, you know, the place, a place. So, obviously, you know, someday I wanted to be, like, where I'm at now. At the time, that was WCW, I think, you know, because, right. you know, TNA hadn't been founded yet. So to be on a major league level, but to me, like, I really always thought the place I really want to be someday is New Japan. And I honestly thought I would. I mean, how do you even begin to put together a plan of how to get there?
Like, that's true.
No idea. And keep in mind, when I started wrestling, I mean, in 1998, the internet wasn't that big of a thing yet for like wrestling, and there was no such thing as social media. Like, YouTube didn't exist, Twitter didn't exist, MySpace and Facebook weren't really a thing yet. I mean, it's like impossible to put this stuff to. I mean, wrestling shows were not even on DVD. Like, you had to get VHS.
Right.
Now people don't even own a VCR anymore. So like, I knew all about the history from reading books and like seeking out wrestling footage and you know, asking questions and stuff like that. But reading about it and PWI, things like that. But I never thought I would get there. So when I did get there, I knew exactly like what to expect. I recognized everybody and I knew exactly what was going on.
I know there's so much more that we haven't even touched on yet. You spent time, of course, in Ring of Honor. You spent time doing Pro Wrestling Guerrilla out in California. Rather than just delve in and just, you know, go bit by bit, some highlights from you working in those companies over the years, anything that you remember, anything that annoyed the shit out of you, anybody that annoyed you? Or... I mean, you know, we're all familiar with PWG.
Nothing annoyed me. I mean, like...
Well, I think Wrestling Society X didn't sit too well with you.
It was... No, I mean, it was okay. I just... At the time, I had an opportunity to come back to TNA, so I didn't want to stay committed when I felt like I was, you know, going to be giving something up. And Matt Sydal was in the exact same boat, and also I believe Delirious. I think that's why Delirious didn't even appear, because he felt like there's other things that he wants to be able to commit to. So none of it was like nothing was ever a bad experience, but. After I got done with my initial break into New Japan, everything went into Fast Forward. So, I mean, there's not so much I could delve into anyway. Like, as soon as I got done, I went and spent a year in Mexico. As soon as I got back from Mexico, everything broke loose. It was like, I debuted in Ring of Honor. I did the Super 8 tournament. Went to Major League Wrestling in Florida, which is where I met most of... like who are my peers today. I mean, Low-Key, Chris Hero, you know, Alex Shelley, all these different guys I met through these first few things after I got back from Mexico, and they were just starting out. A lot of these guys were. I debuted for TNA when I was, you know, just 19 around that time. And I was really just kind of bouncing all over the place. I went to Canada, over Europe, and intermittently I would just go back to Japan. And then back down to Mexico. So there was all that. My first Ring of Honor show was actually their joint show with All Japan. I think it was like their second final battle. Wow. So that was really cool, because I got to see, like, you know, I got to meet, you know, Muda and a lot of the All Japan guys. So that was really cool.
Who's your favorite person to wrestle, if you had to pick?
To wrestle?
Yeah.
One of my favorite guys is probably Kenta Moto. Just because of the styles. I look up to him a lot too. Our styles are really similar. I think I could probably wrestle Rocky Romero and Ricky Reyes in my sleep, just because of how many times I've wrestled them. I could probably wrestle them blindfolded and it would be fine. So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed wrestling with Brian a lot. You know, we've been friends for a long time. I don't know. A lot of different people. I wrestled Ultimo Dragon a few times, which is
nice.
You know, both an honor and a big privilege. But
that is sick.
You know, just on a personal level, it's just, or rather on a professional level, it's always a really great experience. I love wrestling him. You know, aside from being so starstruck by it.
Yeah, I mean, that must be so nerve-wracking to get into the ring with somebody like that.
You know, the first few times, I mean, it really is. But then, you know, like thinking back of my experiences, like, you know, I've wrestled a lot of very high-profile people. And then, you know, when the professional cycle in your head starts kicking in, then you just start thinking about the job. And then, you know, even just on the job, it's just such a great experience. So, the starstruck part of it fades, so you're not nerve-wracked, but But he's if I had to pick definition of a pro, like, that would be it. Like, if somebody were to say, like, what's it like to wrestle a pro wrestler, he's one of the very few candidates I'd put somebody in a ring with him and just say, you know, there's no words, just go do that and you'll know what it's like to be in there with a pro. So
wow. And it's just crazy. I'm just going like, you know, briefly through a list of who you've worked with, you know, over the years. And it's like a who's who. You work with Jay Briscoe, Jay Lethal, Chris Hero, El Generico, Rhett Titus, Kenny King, Mike Mondo. I mean, and these are just guys that we know, you know, from around the horn. And, you know, there's just a plethora of other guys that you've worked with.
Yeah, I mean, that's just like the modern generation.
Yeah, exactly. I'm still racking my brain thinking that you've been doing this for like 15 years. You're such a young dude.
It's funny because, like, because of my age, I apply to so many different generations. I started wrestling before Danielson and Low-Key were wrestling, before Spanky was wrestling. Like, I got a year on those guys, I think. And then, you know, later, because they're older, you know, certain opportunities are going to come their way while, you know, I'm still like 16 or something. So it was kind of nice because I could see my future through my peers. I could look up to them. Even though I'd been doing it as long or sometimes longer, I could look up to them like as my bigger brothers, because I'd like see like, okay, well, they're doing stuff that like now I could learn from this. I could see, you know, what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong, and then someday I'll be able to be better prepared for it. You know, new generations will come along, and then I apply to those generations too. Like then you got like the Alex Shelleys and guys of that generation, and then now they're, you know, veteran performers, and then now you got like Johnny Gargano and guys coming up behind them, and I apply to them because they're like, I'm still in the age range, right. So then it's funny the way it is, like people forget, I guess, like sometimes I forget how long I've been around.
So you mentioned that getting into New Japan was your bucket list. You mentioned the guys that you have worked with. Who is someone that who's on the list, the bucket list, to work with in the future?
I really, really would like to get in the ring with AJ Styles. It's funny because I'm
surprised that hasn't happened.
Yeah, that's exactly why. Just because, he had started wrestling, you know, a couple years before me, and we've known each other for like over a decade. Never once have we ever touched in the ring ever. And I thought
that's
exactly
crazy.
What you're saying. Like, you, like at some point, maybe it would have happened.
Listen
but...
up, TNA.
So I don't know, he's one guy I think just because he's you know, he's still in his prime, and he is maybe I think the face for like one of the greatest wrestlers in the world for like the last 10 years. I mean,
consistently good.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, like, you, I think after that generation of like Guerrero, Malenko's and Jericho's and stuff came along, you know, and they're known as like the barometer. Like, I feel like AJ has led the pack for that now for this last decade, and he still is. And I just think, you know, before he starts winding down, like, I really wish I could get in the ring with him.
I can't imagine that's too far off from now.
I hope so.
That's going to be awesome. It's really hard to believe. There were a couple things that you brought up recently that I wanted to ask you about. You said you wound up spending some time homeless, and you also had a run-in while you were in Mexico, I think while you were training, where you guys were robbed. I don't know if you were with family or alone, or I don't know if you wanted to just tell us about some of those down points that you've gone through, you know.
When I was robbed in Mexico, that was just going across the border, like a border town. I went across and was just doing a show and coming back across to the United States, and on the way back in, me and a couple other guys were stopped and sat on a curb, and it was actually by the police.
So, wow.
I don't know. I mean, like they, it happens a lot of times where you get stopped, and you know, like by sometimes it's, you know, just one of those things that gets lost in translation. So that was that. And I remember when I first moved to Mexico City when I was 18, there's a sandwich shop right next door, and as soon as we checked in, we were going to go walk around the town. It was like the middle of the day, And we stopped next door because we were going to go in and get some food. That was the first place that we went to as soon as we got out of the plane to the hotel. Then we went next door to that shop before walking around. And they refused to serve me because I was an English-speaking American. So it's weird, like, well, not that weird, because I mean, I'm a mixed race person, so like, not like I'm discriminated against in America, but you know, like some people, like they know how that feels, and some more than others. And then I remember being there, and it was like harsh as harsh can be. I mean, it was like being in like the 1930s or something, and they're like straight kicked me out, wouldn't speak to me, refused to serve me, like that type of thing. So
did you try dropping that you were, you know, one of the Lucha Libres or
well, no, but you know, I didn't know what that meant at the time. But it was like a week later we were on, you know, TV in Mexico and doing all the not main events but like high profile matches, and we were wrestling in Arena Mexico every weekend. And then it was like I would go to McDonald's and they'd have me sign a menu, like an autograph. And I was like, man, where were you guys like a week ago? Because I was really hungry when I first got off the plane. You know, so there's stuff like that, you know, that have gone down. And then when I was homeless, that was not even a foreign thing. I was just that was me trying to go to WWE. I went to Florida for FCW. I had done like probably like half a dozen dark matches in the span of a few months, just because of the way that the traveling loops had lined up for the company. And, you know, I was doing well, but like some of the agents and stuff were, you know, telling me that, you know, I'm not 6'5" or anything. So it's not exactly in their best interest to spend any time on me when, you know, John Cena probably has a really important interview that night, you know? So it's like, who am I to them? So he said, it's not that you're doing bad, but you maybe need to try something else. So why don't you go down to Florida? So I did, you know, just the way I'm wired, you know, I just figured I'll do everything right. So, you know, I was eating right, training right, and moved, made all the necessary sacrifices, and it just wasn't working out. And there's almost no way to make this part of it a short story, but long story short, I was there, and it was Murphy's Law. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong. I mean, wow. You know, any time when I could have gotten hurt, I did got hurt. Every no I could have possibly gotten, I got. You know, even in general, like the world was going through a big recession at the time. So, like, I mean, we're talking like 08, 09. When it was like for a lot of people were like really hitting bottom as far as their opportunities being, you know, few and far between. So I was evicted twice and homeless for like a couple weeks, and, you know, picking up quarters in Walmart's parking lot at midnight just so I could eat. So it was pretty bad for a little while, and I had to restart my whole career because obviously I wasn't taking, you know, the same matches and stuff that I would be before, the same tours, because I'm, you know, at the camp down there and dedicating all my time and making all the sacrifices for that. So by the time I was kind of shown the door, like, you know, my career didn't exist anymore. So it was back to wrestling in bars on like Tuesday and Wednesday nights for like $10. So
wow. And again, how old are you?
At that time, I was...
No, I mean right now.
Right now, 28.
You could tell more stories in 15 years than most people could like tell their entire lifetime.
It's insane, man.
Yeah, most of the time when I, you know, get tapped for like podcasts and stuff, we get like about 2 hours in and the people are floored. They're like, I can't believe that everything you say is a new story and we're not even done yet. Like,
were you able to absorb anything though with your time with WWE, whether it's just working dark matches or down in the developmental?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, I was there often enough to understand how the operation works. And obviously, like, you know, a lot of the people in the company are friends of mine. So, I mean, and I had sort of already had an education in major league and mainstream style wrestling. I mean, I had done, like, you know, Wrestling Society X, and eventually I would do Lucha Libre USA. That came after. But then, you know, I had done TNA and, you know, regional TV for like NWA and stuff like that. So, you know, it was just it was really just like finishing school for the major league level protocol.
Right.
It was like being there. So I knew everything that I was going to be tested on. It was just, now I was applying it, I'm still applying it to this day, obviously. I'm TNA and stuff.
Right, so. But you were able to see how the giant machine that is WWE work and run, and you were able to take stuff away from that, even if it's just a knowledge, even if it's just mental?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, I mean, the experiences of it, I mean, the hands-on part of it, even outside of the mental stuff, I mean, you know, I was put in a ring for, you know, TV matches and dark matches and things. I spent time in their training facility and in their camp, which I had already spent time in UPW's camp. So now this is like the second developmental territory I've been in, informally. And so, you know, there's a lot to be learned from it. And I definitely learned a lot. I'm always learning a lot. I mean, my IQ, I knew this at an early age when I started, and some of the older wrestlers kind of helped me to understand it, that, you know, I don't need to worry about knocking the ball out of the park every night when I'm like 13, 14, 15 years old, or even when I'm 22 or 23. Like, I have, you know, a blessing that, you know, if I wrestle till I'm like 45, I could be doing this for, what, like 30 years or something? Jesus. So, I mean, I always wanted to be an efficient performer and have the highest wrestling IQ possible. So, you know, everywhere I go, I think, what can I learn out of this? It's never really been about, like, you know, what can I get out of it? It's always been about what I could learn.
Would you recommend a 13, 14-year-old now that wanted to get into pro wrestling, would you tell them to go for it at 13, 14?
Well, at least not in front of their parents.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't mind telling them in front of their parents, but, I mean, I would tell them with the same caveat that I knew going in, just that, you know, if you feel like you can do it, you know, it's up to you to realize that, and you can't let anybody tell you you can't, because that's going to apply as much at 13 as it is when you're 25. I mean, what's the difference? You're going to wait, you know, what, 8-10 years just to have people tell you the exact same thing, that it's stupid and you can't do it? Like, if you feel like you can do it, then do it. But you got to understand and have the capacity to understand. This is why I would actually rather tell them in front of their parents, so that they have somebody around them that could help them understand. Because I never had that. I've never had a mentor in wrestling. I would want to be able to tell them in front of other people that, you know, there are sacrifices and things that will come along, and you can't be surprised when it does. You know, like, I knew when I started, I could be homeless, I could be hurt, I could be taken advantage of, I could be a political victim. The worst things could happen. So don't be surprised when it does. And when it did, I wasn't surprised. So that's why I hate, like, you know, like, people, you know, don't do all the work and then they get fed up and bitter, or like they get fired and they're bitter. And it's like, dude, we all know this stuff going in. Like, you shouldn't be surprised. Like, I've never, ever been surprised or bitter or felt bad about any of this stuff. So, you know, I would recommend that to anybody.
Do you feel that anybody has taken advantage of you over the years?
I don't know. Like, I've never felt like I should ever worry about other people. Like, I've always been under the mindset of you do you. So anytime I've had shortcomings, reality is sometimes you do know if it's the cause of something or somebody else, but I've never let myself think about it more than that, just because, like, what, like, I'm the time I'm taking this, even the few seconds I waste thinking about that, I could be thinking about what I should be doing next. So it's like, you know, fuck it. Like, figure out the new place to go, because it'll just happen again, you know? So why dissect something that you can't change?
You said you had no mentors when you were coming up. Was there anybody that you looked at on TV or locally that really kind of that you molded yourself after, or you kind of looked at them and said, like, I want to be that, or, you know, that's the kind of thing that I want to strive to become?
I had a lot of heroes, you know. Probably the single greatest influence I've ever had in or out of the ring was Eddie Guerrero. And ironically, he's the only member of the Guerrero family I haven't met. Everybody else, you know, from Vicky to his kids to Chavo and Chavo Sr., Hector, Mondo, I've met them all, and at some point, you know, they've been influential to me as far as advice or things like that, because, I, you know, I've gone to them and kind of pestered them. So I just bother them, but he's always been my biggest influence, just because of, you know, his story, his life, and, you know, maybe even more outside of the ring than in it. But I, you know, going up, I didn't, I never had any older wrestlers who looked after me. My parents never knew what I was doing. They've like never even watched me wrestle. Like, it's just, they just know that I do it. So, you know, I've never had like anybody where I could, you know, ask like I've never had somebody who's looking out for me. Like, I've really been seat of my pants by myself this whole time. Which is why, like, I enjoy doing podcasts, or like, if, you know, young wrestlers ask me questions or something like that. Like, I love answering my Ask FM questions and things like that, just because nobody ever did that for me. So, you know, I'm happy when people, you know, need help. I'm happy to give it if I can. But
28 years old and a world of knowledge, like you said,
that's incredible.
It still is just boggling my mind.
I can't believe I'm still doing it, to be honest. Like, just seeing how much help other people have, and like, you know, when they have friends that go to bat for them, or older wrestlers that look out for them, things like that, you know, or some people are born into it, obviously. And we, you know, we've seen that a million times, but like, I can't believe that I made it this far, like, not having anybody to say, hey, you should do this or you should do that. Like, I'm surprised I haven't screwed it up enough to like get me out of it.
but I mean you're in a good place right now. You're with a great group in TNA wrestling, I'm sure.
Oh no, absolutely. I mean, that's part of why I'm shocked. Like, I can't believe that I can't believe I've done so well, like, you know, not having had that direction. But, you know, I just that's why I feel like I really enjoy seeing people that are so driven, and you can tell that they want it, because they're going to find answers to all their questions. They'll answer their questions twice if it takes that, you know, like, just, you know, so many great things can come about when somebody is willing to make all the sacrifices, not 90% of them, not 95%, not 99%, but like 100% of what you're supposed to do. Like, you know, good things can come about.
Well, hell, man. I mean, that's your life story right there. You know,
with a lot left to be written.
Yes. A lot left to be written.
Yeah. God willing, you know, I'm 15 years in now, so if I could just take care of myself, and, you know, maybe another 15 could be added, and then you go
become the doctor and the lawyer.
Yeah, then
that's the plan, right? That is the contingency plan.
I'll go into finishing school then, and get a real job.
Oh, unbelievable, man. TJ. Yeah. Is there anything that you want to get out there? Anything you want to plug? Anything you want to tell the people?
Well, I don't have a whole lot to plug. If people want to follow me on a daily basis, I'm actually not very much into social media, but you can follow me on Twitter, at MegaTJP. You could ask me questions at AskFM, also under the same name, MegaTJP. And, obviously, you know, for the time being, you guys can see me own the ring on every Thursday night. So
damn right.
That's pretty cool too. I guess, you know, if I could plug one thing, I think it's pretty special this week, because I'm wrestling Chris Sabin in a singles match, and he's a new face of TNA Impact. And at the moment, I'm the new face of the X Division. And I think that if you were to rewind the clock like 2 years, nobody would have guessed that this is where we would be today, you know, headlining a television show in the positions that we are.
That's great.
So I think
watched by millions of people.
It's such a positive moment. So I think that, you know, I encourage people to see, you know, how far we've come, and this is just the tip of the iceberg, because there's plenty of guys that are just as hungry and just as talented as us. And you know, we're all next. So
real quick, TJ, just popped into my head. I know that Impact has been taking the show on the road quite a bit lately. And I know that you've been in and out of TNA, you know, for years now. Do you like the new traveling TNA? I mean, is it a different, better experience?
I love it. It's something that I thought that they should have done years ago. And, you know, I don't know, like, you know, it's not up to me to see, you know, why they chose to do it exactly when they did. But I think the organic nature of being in front of a new city every night, it's just, I mean, the best of everybody's brought out, and it magnifies how valuable each piece of the company really is. And I think that, you know, when you're in the same place every night, and especially in Orlando, where, you know, a lot of the fans are either repeat fans every single day, or some of them, you know, aren't necessarily wrestling fans, are being introduced for the first time to wrestling passing through. You know, I think that you don't get to see the value in some of our performers. And I think now that they're on the road, people can see, like, you know, the real level at which these guys are performing, you know, including myself. I love it. I think it's the best thing for it.
Awesome. This Thursday, Spike TV, 9 Eastern, 8 Central. If you're around the world, check your local listings. Check this guy out, Champion versus Champion.
Dude, I'm going to be watching that match. Not one person at the bar that I work at is going to get a drink while that match is on. I swear. That's funny.
He's just saying that because he drinks everything and there's nothing left for the patrons.
Well, TJ. Somebody's got to drink for me because I don't drink. So.
Good for you.
Yes, that's definitely a good thing. That's why you're still here at 28. TJ, my friend, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
No, thank you guys for having me.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
From the current to the way back, tune into Turnbuckle Throwbacks every week, exclusively on RadioInfluence.com, Buzzsprout.com, and on Stitcher.
Well,
I didn't read enough about it.
That's all right. We're back. We hope you enjoyed that interview. It's hard to believe, and I know I keep saying I sound like an asshole, but fucking dude's 28 years old.
We were going into this. We were worried about getting like a half hour because we didn't. Neither one of us are totally huge up to date or knowledgeable on Perkins' career. So to get that was good. That was amazing.
Fucking great guy.
Yes.
Great guy. Funny dude. You know, we were doing our thing, and he's 28, dude.
Yeah, I know.
It's crazy. And he's getting his due in TNA, man.
Yeah, and he said that he got hurt a lot, but I guess that was in like developmental.
Probably when he was in the WWE, yeah.
Because I haven't heard any stories about him getting hurt in TNA or anything like that. He seems to be holding up.
Yeah, holding up considering everything he's been through. And fucking Matt had to call in and ruin everything at the beginning. Oh, God, if you would have seen his goofy face while he's driving, it was hilarious. Hilarious. I really don't have anything else to add to this. There's really, like, unless we're, like, fucking, like, really missing something, I don't know if anything else has really happened. I mean, WWE's overseas. Raw was on replay. It was kind of dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, not like it was a bad show, but it was just it was there. It was a, you know,
there was more good. There was more good wrestling on the show.
Oh, the Brie Bella fucking Natalia match was the shits. She kept going back to some fucking chin lock with her left arm behind her knee or some shit like that.
Yeah, see,
that's my rating for fucking for the Divas match. One big.
Like, I remember watching it. Like I remember, like, but I don't remember anything.
The ending, John Cena took on Ryback, and Cena always loses table matches. He could have lost. He could have given Ryback something, but
was that a funky finish, or did he just put him?
No, he gave him the attitude adjustment through a table in the corner. But it was weird. At one point, they had a standoff outside where they were each holding a set of stairs. Like,
oh, I saw. Yeah.
You know, that late in a match, all right, here, when you watch matches from like the 50s, 60s. The one move they always went back to was the lockup. Mm-hmm. You know, they'd fight for 20 minutes and then something would break it up, whether it was like, you know, they'd get off the ropes, whatever. They'd go back to a lockup. You don't see that anymore, you know? And like when guys just stop and stare at each other,
yeah,
it just feels really fucking weird and awkward.
And it was funny, like Ryback picked up the steps first and then Cena's just staring at him. Takes him like 8 seconds to pick up the other stairs when he could have just gone into the ring.
Yeah, like I don't know what they were going for with that.
Like, wait, it's bizarre. It's weird.
Yeah, really, really fucking weird. Other than that, what else happened? Oh, Daniel Bryan fought Kane, and he actually won. So good for him. The streak continues.
Christian beat Alberto Del Rio.
Good. It's about time they build up Christian again.
Yeah, I think that's what they're. I don't think he's maybe lost like one match since he's been back. Maybe
Christian, before he got hurt, has always been a good hand. He always has solid matches at a minimum, and they always put him over. It's really like it's really weird that
Christian. I think they're
going
to give him one more. I mean, they might just feed him to Del Rio or whoever at some point, but I think they may just try to give him maybe one more top run and then have him settle in RVD was on the show, wasn't he? RVD Russell?
He might have. I don't know. I don't remember. Yeah, didn't he lose to somebody?
No, did he beat Jack Swagger?
Maybe. I don't see.
Yeah, see, I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, but he's been kind of directionless, too, since they brought him back, which is what
Vince
I was afraid
McMahon
of.
Shit on D-Bry, telling him that he was worthless and he wasn't Triple H, and I don't know.
Yeah.
It was there. I don't want to shit on Ruff just for the sake
just
of
for the sake of shit. It's a tape show. It's never. I mean, you're not gonna go nuts with it.
Oh, you know what I had heard? There was some rumblings that there's a new pay per view name, and there's talk that it might include War Games. I know Phil Rea mentioned it on his Facebook, and he was fucking practically creaming all over his keyboard because his kid actually started coming up with like teams of five, like to go at each other. So you know that for a 5 year old who's or six, I think he's six, to be that perceptive, and he's just learning the business from his dad, you know. So it's like maybe they're onto something. Maybe.
Hey, man, if you bring back War Games, I'm okay with it.
And they just did a show a couple of weeks ago all about War Games, Phil and Dave.
Oh,
so.
Did they?
Yeah. So, you know what? Maybe it's time. It's been time for a long time. Maybe it's about time.
But the thing that the only criticism that I've heard about it or ever, like, read about it on, like, the websites and whatever is that you have to cancel. You have to take away so many more seats.
They'll just charge more for the other seats.
Yeah.
You know why? Because fucking War Games is a spectacle. Like, who's not going to want to see that, you know?
Yeah, but they got, like, I would love to, don't get me wrong, like I said, I'm on board with it, but they got Hell in a Cell, they got Elimination Chamber.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like you look at Elimination Chamber, and you look at Hell in a Cell, and then you see, like, a cage around two rings with a roof on it. I mean, is it as menacing as it used to be?
It's just the team format that makes it interesting. That's, I think, yeah. That's what would do it. Because you've never seen, actually, that's a lie. You've seen multi-person Hell in a Cell matches, but.
But nothing wherever it's like the structure where it goes into the match beyond once everybody's in.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's guys just beating the piss out of each other, you know, like with a one-man advantage for like 20 minutes. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, now you can win.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I've always been a fan. My favorite War Games actually is probably like the worst one ever. It was like the leading up to it with the Dungeon of Doom and Hogan. Ugh. And I loved that. I guess that was because I was young at the time. But the build up of Vader actually becoming a good guy and teaming with Hogan and then going AWOL.
Well, because they couldn't have Hogan lose to Vader. Didn't Hogan wrestle Vader and he no sold the power bomb? I seem to remember that.
It's possible with Hogan. I always did that. He would take the other person's finisher and get up. And
I listened to Pat Buck. He did his own podcast a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, we just had TJ and we just talked about TNA. But his sentiment was Sting and Hulk Hogan, as great as they were for the business, they just need to leave. You could say it.
I think that they have a place there.
Yeah, but a place where they're taking away a spot every week, and they're taking away money every week from people that, you know, I mean, a guy like TJ who busted his ass and nothing worked out for him in WWE developmental, don't you think he'd like to have a couple extra bucks in his pocket?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not saying like there's, you're never, everyone deserves to make money.
And I'm sure it was cool as hell to have Hulk Hogan come out and be like, you know, like have a story with you.
Yeah.
But in the same sense, man.
No, I mean, if you're around in spite of someone as opposed to because of them, then that's a problem. TNA still exists in spite of Hulk Hogan and his position and the money that he makes and in spite of Sting. I think that if they were able to somehow make it where they're successful because of them, like if that means taking a pay cut to help other aspects of the company thrive, then that would be the ideal situation. But you know that Hogan and I guess even Sting wouldn't take a pay cut. And that's surprising me. Not at all about Hogan, but I feel like Sting would.
Well, I don't know what Sting's making, but Hogan's been rumored to be making $30,000 an appearance.
Yeah.
If he took a third of that, that's still a shit ton of money. And that opens up, what, fucking 20 grand a week? That's opening up almost $1 million right there.
Yeah, it's a lot of money tied up in the Hulkster with a not a whole lot of you know, progress to show for it.
But we are not here to shit on TNA.
No, I like TNA.
Is letting the young guys and the smaller guys and, you know, not the 6'7", 300-pound sold-off monsters run with the ball. And I think it's, you know, it's apropos for the business. I mean, you know, look, they're strapping the rocket again to Daniel Bryan.
Yep.
They let CM Punk run with the ball for a long time.
Yep.
So maybe the business is finally changing. Now we'll have to find something else to bitch about.
And just like TJ said in the interview, it goes back forever. You had your Punks and your Bryans, you had your Harts and your Michaels, and so like it's not like this is uncharted waters. It's just my point in that interview was maybe a little misguided. It wasn't in terms of size. It was in terms of freshness. Because even though Chris Sabin's been there since day one, he still seems like a fresh face in that part of the card.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's something new that we haven't seen before. That's basically it wasn't just a size comment. It was just about it was new faces in the main event picture, and that's basically what I meant by that question about getting the ball. But I'm glad that they're doing it. Hopefully, I don't expect a long reign for Chris Sabin. I expected him to lose that Hardcore Justice to Bully Ray. But I'm just glad that he did it because I thought he was a star from the beginning.
We will see what happens.
Yeah.
Panic at the Disco. We've got a closing number for you tonight, folks.
Yeah, I hope this is not just like a long video.
Yeah, just click. Yeah, no. Click. No. Don't click the updates. No, you clicked the wrong one. Close that. Click activate. There you go. Right under. Yeah, there you go. It's for our buddy TJ. Yeah, just activate it. Fuck it. Activate the fucking cancerous laptop. Let's hope I have this cranked up. We're not getting rickrolled. We got an ad. It's all right. We could fill time for a little bit. I'll cut the volume here. No, you can put the volume all the way up. I got to cut on the soundboard, so it's good. Yeah, you may just want to press play, so we're not just sitting here wondering what inspires us. SWN.shiningwizards.com. Kevin, you got anything to plug?
Shoot. Yeah, I got some shows coming up.
Well, tell us about them.
Yeah. Let's see. I got this Sunday. I'll be back at my old stomping ground, Montclair, Tyrannies of Montclair.
Nice.
Just had a great show with National Touring Comics, Mike Gaffney and Joe Fernandez. On August 21st, I'll be in West Orange, New Jersey, bringing in a good buddy, Mark Norman, who's just seen on Conan O'Brien. So
nice.
He'll be closing out the show. So yeah, that's about it.
One of my favorite tunes.
Back to the street where we began.
You know what? I almost want to turn on Rock Band and start fucking playing this. I almost do.
That's a good, like I said, this album is in my car right now.
Dude, honestly, this is one of the songs where I can play every instrument and sing it and gold star everything.
On Rock Band?
I love this fucking song on that game. It's so much fun.
I don't think I've ever played Rock Band.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You might have to stick around a while.
Oh, no, I gotta get out of here. This was too much fun.
This was great tonight, man. Yeah,
really
a good
was.
Show.
I wish there was just more going on outside of the interview. You know, there's not a...
It was a good week to have an interview.
Yeah, that's true.
TJ Perkins. Manic, please catch him this Thursday as he takes on Chris Sabin, champion versus champion.
Yeah, very much look forward to that match.
Two guys that can go. Hopefully they don't have a fucking Bully Ray bullshit involvement. And they actually let these guys have a finish.
Yeah.
So, I am gone for a couple of weeks. I may have some stuff that I'm doing from overseas for you guys.
Ooh.
But if not, you're in Matt's hands.
Yeah. I'll be around, but Matt will be the guy in charge.
Well, Matt has to.
Yeah, he has to be. I can't even fucking work this laptop.
Oh, please don't say that, because now he's going to be like, oh, and everybody makes fun of me. Yeah, we do make fun of you because you suck. I guess that's it.
Yeah, man.
I have nothing to plug except for my ass, because I think I have a shit brewing.
Yeah, you've been on fire, almost literally.
Yeah, but not during the show.
No.
Hey, how many of you guys thought he was taking a piss?
Took all of our biting of the tongues to not bring that up.
Well, we're not going to tell you whether he was or not. Did we say it when we talked to Matt? No, we didn't. You know what? Fuck it. Did TJ Perkins take a piss? Answer yes or no.
You'll have to listen to find out.
Matt will tell you next week. Goodbye, everybody.
Later, guys.
We're feeling so good, just the way that we do when it's 9 in the afternoon.